And Dr. Raymond Hamdan, clinical and forensic psychologist based at the Human Relations Institute, starting off talking about happiness and this quest that seems that so many of us are on to be happy. Do you think we put ourselves under pressure, this idea of, you know, am I happy? Is there something lacking in my life? I don't know what that feeling is to be happy.
A lot of people have a different definition for happiness, and they create a situation that they think is happy, but it's kind of like a fake happiness. It's like today's young generation will say, oh, well, last night we went out and had a great time. I said, that's terrific. Tell me, what did you do? Well, we went to this location. They had a lot of music, and there was a lot of people there. Did you talk to anybody? No, we couldn't. The music was too loud. Well, you know, when you go to these places, which I haven't been to in years, I hear that what people are really doing is they're communicating with each other through their electronic phone system. And they may be having something of nourishment, but they're not really interacting. And then when they leave that situation, they claim to be happy. But it's a fake happiness because there's really no intervention. It's a falsified sense of happiness because they really haven't had an opportunity to look at any other kind of avenues. Now, let me explain what I mean. This is going to get a little bit philosophical, but I think it's important for people to realize what's happening in society today may not be the full responsibility of media, and especially electronic media, but you got to put some sense of boundaries into how much you use media. There's certainly nothing wrong with the glorious opportunities that we now have worldwide with computers and internet. There's nothing wrong with all the wonderful games that we can play on our visual electronic media. The problem is it does take away from sociological development, from the ability to relate to others. And we're seeing where people may be having difficulty with learning how to relate to others. At a conference this last October in the United States, and it happened to be a forensic conference. And in that forensic science conference, one of the members of the society mentioned that they believe, as psychologists, and this person happened to be a forensic psychologist, that some of the cases that they're seeing in the police situation are people that are suffering from a particular personality disorder that are involved in this cyber crime stuff, not necessarily cyber terrorism, but cyber crime.
Mm.
And they're finding that people who get involved in these kind of things may have a personality disorder. Now, at that time, and this was last October, it was not certain that this was a conclusive statement because there wasn't enough research. Recently, one of the universities did some research on it, but even in their research, they're saying that this is not conclusive. They gave a lot of options for further research. And as a psychologist who's in clinical practice, not just academic teaching, and there's nothing wrong with just academic teaching, because both have to balance out. The academics have to do the research, the clinicians put it into practice, then they meet at these conferences to see what really works and what doesn't work, to go back and re-research things, which is where the word research comes from, to research the evidence. So what we're seeing is which is it that comes first has nothing to do with the reality of the fact that both are affecting each other. A person with an individualized personality disorder, meaning that it may be genetic or learned at a young age, will then be gravitating to this electronic media where they can hide and they can play out their particular psychological needs. However, a person who may not have those pathologies could have so much exposure to the media without any boundaries, like parents saying no more than 1 hour on this particular game, but it's okay if you're doing your homework. It's just not okay to be playing these aggressive kinds of nonsensical games. If they're not given those boundaries, then they can develop the same characteristics as those people who were vulnerable before playing those games.
Right.
So in other words, which came first, the brain process that caused the behavior or the behavior that brought the process that in the brain? Today we're seeing it's an actual balance. We're no longer arguing which one came first. We know that both exist. So, for instance, if a person suffers from obsessive-compulsive disorder, as an example of a clinical example here, we know that there's an area in the frontal lobe, the orbital frontal lobe, that will depict certain characteristics in the brain flow that says, here are evidences of possible OCD symptoms. But that doesn't mean that all OCD patients, that's obsessive compulsive disorder patients, have genetic problems in that brain area. It also says that when a person acquires that kind of anxiety that manifests in symptoms of obsessive compulsive disorder, the brain cells change, the brain structure changes. It's called brain plasticity. That will also show abnormal functioning in the same brain area. So how do you treat it is going to be exactly the same. It may require medication and it may require psychological intervention. The research shows that when you do both, you get the best results. You go to a psychiatrist, and correctly, they're going to prescribe medication to see if that works. You go to a psychologist, they're going to correctly do various kinds of techniques to reduce the symptoms of OCD. In the majority of patients, those symptoms go away, and so does the brain plasticity change occur to where that abnormality may not be seen. When you go to a psychiatrist, you're going to get the same treatment but use of medication first. So either one will work. It's up to you which one works best for you. If you're the kind of personality that can patiently go through the process, it's going to have a very long effect that is very positive. If you're a quick fix kind of a person, then you're going to need to go where you can get that medication to get the quick fix. The problem with that, if you don't learn also through psychological techniques how to self-manage, that process may be there even without the medication.
So it's down to you, you know, your level of happiness, your state of mind. It's all about you and your attitude, your approach, the relationship you have with yourself, the intrapersonal connection. So how you think, how you reason, how you problem solve, how you view the world, that inner dialogue you have going on inside.
It's very important to start with yourself. Before you can understand others, you need to know yourself. It's very important to realize that it's okay to have these quirks. 90% of the people that psychologists work with are normal people who just have some kind of adjustment problems. The 10% remaining may need medication or hospitalization. Those are different kinds of situations that require psychiatric intervention. Now, there's nothing wrong with either one. It's a matter of what you need at the time to get to what's called a normal phase of life, where you're adjusting well. But maladjustment or adjustment disorders usually comes when people get out of alignment with their personality needs, their personality structure. So what we do then is we help self-discover. First thing is to understand the individual. And out of 7 billion people on the planet, there's 7 billion different people on the planet. So everybody is unique in a certain way. Psychologists are trained to do the analysis, the evaluation, the assessment, to help you understand yourself. With that intrapersonal ability to look favorably and to begin to realize ways to learn favorable cognitions, emotions, and behaviors, then you can better relate to others with less hiccups. So even when there are some problems between you and a favored individual in your life, it doesn't mean it's the end of the world. So you can reach that sense of cooperation. Many times what we see in people who are in conflict or nations who are in conflict with each other is a lot of the misunderstanding that's based on the lack of self-assurance and self-confidence. So as a political psychologist, whenever I'm consulting between groups or between particular systems within a nation, one of the things I'm doing is helping each person or each group realize the benefit of their contribution, not to just say, you have to understand the other person. Before you can understand somebody else, you have to understand yourself.
Well, according to Abraham Lincoln, most people are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. We will continue our discussion on happiness and we'll address your text messages. Here we've got already somebody who's struggling with anger and how to manage that anger. And also a father concerned about his son, the son feeling insecure after the birth of a sibling, and lots more to address.